News Talk 1110-993 WBT. 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110 discussing the loss of trust in our institutions. There was a survey, global survey, 35,000 respondents across 28 countries, and government leaders, journalists, and business leaders losing all sorts of trust. All three categories. The least trusted, journalists, followed by government leaders, and then business leaders. But it's all in the neighborhood of about two-thirds. And I said at the beginning of the program that the way I build trust is to bribe people. And so here is the opportunity. It is the biggest. It is the best RV shopping experience in the Carolinas. It's got the best variety of dealers. It's got the best variety of RVs available for any need, for any budget. What am I talking about? Well, it's the RV show, obviously. It's going to be at the Park Expo and Conference Center January 21st and 23rd. And if you would like a four-pack of tickets, this is your opportunity. Be caller number 11, 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. The 11th caller gets a four-pack of tickets to the 2022 Charlotte RV show. Again, it's coming up on the 21st through the 23rd. It's going to be at the Park Expo and Conference Center. Tickets can be picked up Tuesday or Thursday. All right, so would that be today? Is that today? I don't know. I just got the note here. So they'll tell you all the information when you win. If you win, I should say. Good luck. Good luck. 704-570-1110 or 1-800-WBT-1110. So Jim Goodman. Oh, I keep forgetting to mention this, so let me do it right now because I'm talking about media. But local media, a guy who I worked with out at Stories, two guys actually that I worked with out at Stories for years and years, Mark Becker from Channel 9, WSOC-TV, is retiring along with his longtime partner, photographer guy, Carl McLean. And great guys, just really great guys. I worked when I was a reporter at WBT out in the field. And I mean, Carl was this, I mean, he's this huge guy. He's like tall, he's like this mountain of a man, but you always felt okay. Like if you went to a scene and things were a little dicey, if Carl was there, you were always like, okay, he's media, I'm with him. But he was just this really, really nice guy. So congrats to Mark and Carl on their retirement from WSOC-TV. Great guys, and enjoy your retirement. So Jim Goodman, owner of Capital Broadcast Company up in Raleigh, big-time donor to all sorts of left-wing causes. And the Capital Broadcast Company owns WRAL. WRAL is a major influencer in North Carolina politics, North Carolina media. They actually just hired over, what's his name, Brian Anderson from the AP. He of the fawning questions to Governor Cooper during the COVID briefings. Travis Fain, Laura Leslie, these are the folks that are at WREL. It's a bit, and they're like they're associated with, I think they got Andy Specht also with the PolitiFact. So this is the operation that Jim Goodman funds, okay? And he gave a speech at the MLK Unity event where he said, we only need to have one march. We're going to march to the polls. If you want to have a march to get something done that really changes things, then you march to the polls. Calling on people to vote for Democrats. He said, quote, I can't remember anything as frustrating, among other issues, by the way. He talked about how bad the Republicans are on the Leandro school funding case and the redistricting lawsuits, the redistricting maps, which, by the way, I've got a interesting tidbit of a story that came out at the Dispatch. But he says, I can't remember anything as frustrating and as inexplicable as the fact that we did not take Medicaid expansion. This is one of the things that, I am often surprised when I hear people on the left and the media, but I repeat myself, that don't understand the arguments or have never even heard in Goodman's case. He says he just doesn't even know of an argument why you wouldn't take the Medicaid expansion, as North Carolina has refused to do. This despite the fact that Republicans have outlined very clearly for years why they oppose the Medicaid expansion. And by the way, right now, kind of like the mask mandate, vaccine mandate stuff, what did the Supreme Court just rule? That if you take the federal money, you have to do the vaccine mandates. You got to follow their mandates. That means every state that expanded Medicaid, every one of those hospitals now, they're all under the mandate, right? So one of the reasons, this is one of the reasons. There are many others, like how Medicaid doesn't actually deliver quality care. Studies have shown that if you actually just give people the money rather than enroll them, coverage is not care. There are other ways, if you're trying to get people health care, there are other ways to do it, better ways to do it. Anyway, he says he's never heard of any of this, which is pretty interesting. I mean, that's not an indictment on the Republicans, Jim. That's an indictment on you, right? You got up and gave a speech ripping into people, and you don't know their argument. In 2010, President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law, part of which allows states to expand Medicaid, allows them. Remember, they tried to force states first, and then states sued. Supreme Court said, no, you can't force them to expand. So then they tried to dangle the carrots out in front of them with extra money. Please, please, expand Medicaid. I swear we'll never reduce the amount of money we pay you for the reimbursements. Jim Goodman made clear that he believes the only logical reason he can deduce for not taking the funding for North Carolina is along the lines of, quote, I can't do it. President Obama did that. That's an Obama program, so we're not going to do it. I haven't heard any logical explanation. So it's philosophical. It's political. We're not going to support that black president. That's what Jim Goodman said. Jim Goodman, the owner of WRAL, whipping people up into a frenzy with racial demagoguery. That's his play. Because he's ignorant. He's ignorant. He doesn't know what the argument is, although he's kind of all over the map here because he says he hasn't heard a logical explanation, so it's philosophical. Well, philosophical would indicate that there's some bit of logic behind it. I mean, unless you're saying it's like ideological, in which case then you're just using the incorrect word, which is weird for the owner of a journalistic enterprise. But if it's philosophical, then generally speaking, one, you know, employs a certain logic to their philosophy. Well, yes, unless it's critical race theory, then that's absolutely. But so philosophically, he says it's political, but then he says what? It's racist. Of course it is, because everything is racist. My gosh. When all you got's a hammer, so everything's a nail, right? This guy is the owner of WRAL News. I still read WRAL News because I need to know what kind of narrative they're advancing at all times. You always have to know what they're advancing. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Remember, you can email Pete at thepetecalendershow.com. You can also call 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. So I might as well mention this now. The Dispatch, this is the publication, the online publication, that was set up. Fact-based reporting and commentary on politics, policy, and culture informed by conservative principles. Jonah Goldberg, never-Trumper guy, who wrote the book Liberal Fascism, and now kind of disavows everything he wrote. Anyway, this is a piece by Andrew Eggers. Andrew Egger. And headline, in North Carolina redistricting, it's Madison Cawthorn versus the GOP. And it's an interesting piece. I mean, it just kind of goes over a lot of the stuff about, you know, the establishment versus the grassroots kind of fight and this narrative crafting. And he's got quotes in here from Dallas Woodhouse, you know, pushing back on that notion, saying, you know, gives me flashbacks. Like, I ran the Republican Party, and there was always, like, we would have the chairman's elections, and, you know, they'd say, we don't want somebody from the establishment. And I'm like, we're the party. You do realize that the very second somebody gets elected as a Republican Party officer, you are by definition the bleeping establishment. You can't not be. So there's a lot of that vibe in the piece. But what I found to be the most interesting part of this write-up is the gaming out of what might happen if the North Carolina Supreme Court strikes down these redistricting maps, right? The new maps that that give Republicans, everybody seems to agree, gives them like a 10-4 advantage out of the congressional seats. And if that is the, it gets struck down, if that map gets struck down, then what of the fate of Madison Cawthorn? Because Cawthorn announced he was running in the 13th district. And remember, a lot of people said, oh, that was the district that everyone thought Tim Moore was going to run for. But if the maps get struck down, it would be very, very easy to turn that 13th a little bit more Democrat. You could do that by including more of Mecklenburg County. Here's a quote from Woodhouse. While the 14th is relatively hard for redistricting map makers to fiddle with, the 14th is the one out west. That's where Cawthorn lives. The 13th, where Cawthorn is now going to run, it's much less tamper-proof because it bumps right up against the 9th, the Democrat-heavy district that contains the city of Charlotte. If Republicans have to change the map, which is highly likely, that 13th district is likely to become enormously less friendly to Republicans. And the reason is, if you try to protect your incumbents to the degree you can, and you got to make changes somewhere, that leaves you the 13th. And the 13th, because it connects to Mecklenburg County, can be altered a lot by taking a bunch of Charlotte Democrats and putting them into the 13th. Also in that scenario, no single person's going to have more control over the final makeup of the map than North Carolina Speaker of the House, Tim Moore. Which I'm not sure he's going to have the most control, but he's probably going to have some control. Now, Cawthorn's gambit could pay off running in the 13th, right? It could pay off. But if the redistricting picture gets blown up by the Supreme Court and the state has to go back and redraw the maps, then they could easily redraw that map to make it less likely that Cawthorn wins the seat. Which I don't think he really contemplated happening. I don't think anybody has contemplated that happening. But Dallas Woodhouse games it out. It's at the Dispatch. It is apparently open. It's out from behind their paywall. So if you want to read it, you can go to thedispatch.com. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. There is no shortage of candidates for the title of the most dangerous business idea of the moment, writes Adrian Wooldridge at Bloomberg.com. Management by algorithm may remove what humanity there is left in the corporate world. The office-less future may dissolve workers into angst-ridden atoms. But I want to suggest a less obvious contender for the title of most dangerous business idea of the moment. Social purpose. The idea of social purpose can be heard wherever high-minded people gather to talk about business. In America, BlackRock Incorporated CEO Larry Fink argues that companies should have a social purpose beyond financial performance, and that this purpose should involve a, quote, positive contribution to society. Which is really what we learned in the documentary starring Steve Martin called The Jerk. In France, the 2019 PACTE Act, or the PACTE Act, it gives companies more freedom to pursue social as well as profit-maximizing purposes. Globally, almost every management consultancy or accountancy worthy of the name, has a practice devoted to the promotion of the P word. It's purpose. It's social purpose. What does it mean for a corporation as opposed to, and by the way, the connection here is obviously to Jim Goodman at WRAL, right? Do you think that they don't have a corporate purpose, a social purpose, after hearing what he said at the MLK Unity event? What does it mean for a corporation, as opposed to an individual, to have a social purpose? And what is the distinction between a business purpose and a social purpose? Terry Smith, the boss of the 29 billion pound, because this Bloomberg writer, he talks about Britain and talks about France. He's all over the map on this stuff, like literally. But he quotes Terry Smith, the boss of the 29 billion pound Fundsmith Equity Fund. He is so sick of Unilever and the company's habit of dolloping the term on everything that it produces, that he exclaimed in a recent letter to investors, that it produces a company which feels it has to define the purpose of Hellman's mayonnaise. And if that's the case, in our view, you've lost the plot. There's undoubtedly lots of verbiage and virtue signaling going on here, he says, but so is something much more dangerous. So the people at the heart of the social purpose movement want to reprogram corporations to solve social problems that governments and voluntary organizations have proved incapable of solving, apparently. Directors will be held to account for reaching social purposes rather than financial goals. Shareholders will have a duty to advance corporate purpose, as well as their right to derive financial benefit from ownership. Auditing committees, consisting both of, you know, insiders of the business as well as outsiders, they'll be the ones to hold companies to account for their impact on, quote, people and planet. Equipped with new measurement systems and the ability to deprive the business of its corporate charter. To realize how radical this is, you need to understand two things. The first is that the purpose movement does not want to broaden the range of options available to business. That's not the point. There's nothing in current corporate law that prevents companies from pursuing social purpose if they wish. Free to do it. Use your company, use capitalism, use your wealth, use it how you want to. And if you would like to do good things with it, then by all means, do good things with it. The second is the purpose movement is much more than stakeholder capitalism in new clothes. The advocates of stakeholder capitalism only are trying to undo what the Chicago school revolution of the 70s did, that put shareholder value at the heart of the corporation. Right? That was the stakeholder capitalism movement, trying to undo the Chicago school revolution of the 70s. The advocates, though, of social purpose, they want to go much further. They want to undo the liberal revolution of the 1850s. Before the liberal revolution, businesses had to demonstrate that they were pursuing a social purpose in order to earn the privilege of being able to incorporate. Right? They had to go get a limited liability, right? That meant anything from building a bridge, colonizing a new world. But it meant you had to go cap in hand to a government and plead your case. That is a process that could take months and cost serious money. The liberal revolution of the 1850s made incorporation both quick and easy. It made it a right rather than a privilege. That's actually what's going on with the social purpose movement. Purpose-driven capitalism would put politics back at the heart of the new corporation, deciding what the world's problems are, let alone figuring out how to solve them. That is an inherently political task, and it's not one for which CEOs are particularly well-trained, given their lavish incomes and insulated lifestyles. At best, the purpose-driven formula is a recipe for paralysis as companies debate world betterment forever. At worst, it's going to lead to the rule of the purpose police. You're going to have like a what he calls a self-selecting group of politicians and regulators and managers who are going to take it upon themselves to define what social purpose means in practice, and then they'll harass companies who fail to meet their prescribed goals. Some of this stuff is, you know, hilarious when you see like the edicts that come down from, the corporate honchos after they've spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on consultants, and they come up with, you know, some phrase. And he's got an example here of a company that's Thales. SA spent 6 months working on this. This is a French defense and technology company. And they spent 6 months working on a statement of its corporate purpose. They consulted more than half of its 86,000 workers. And they came up with building a future we can all trust. This is a defense contractor, okay? You make systems that kill people, right? And break things, to quote Rush Limbaugh, right? Like, that's what you do. Do you need a social purpose for that mission? It's going to stoke cultural resentment as well. More on that in a minute. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Pete Callender here. Pete at the Pete Callender Show. 704-570-1110. 1-800-WBT-1110. Purpose-driven capitalism. It's going to put politics back at the heart of the corporation. This is a piece at Bloomberg today, written by Adrian Wooldridge. Business doesn't need a social purpose revolution. By the way, this idea that all of a sudden people are very, very interested to know about what their companies and what that make their products and services are all about. We were told that this was like a millennial thing and then a Gen Z thing, and they're very interested in all of that. Well, why are they interested in that? Well, how did they get interested in that sort of thing? Who did that to them? Because this isn't something that an entire generation of children just became aware of all on their own, right? No, they were taught about this. They were told that this is important, and then they said, yes, this is important. And they kind of regurgitated it back out, and then the companies are like, oh, they say this is important. We ran some focus groups. They say it's important, so we're going to, you know, make sure that people know that we care about social justice when they buy our widget. Okay, so social purpose. But when you start codifying some of this stuff, as they are looking to do over in Europe, now you're going to have people that are policing this sort of thing. And he says this is all going to stoke cultural resentment. The populist movement that gave us Brexit and President Trump is driven by a sense that the sort of people who talk loftily about social purpose, right, our high-minded credentialed elite, right, the sense is that they have taken over an ever wider range of institutions, from universities to the media, and companies. If you want to add companies to that list, you're going to feed the forces of revolt. Problems are best solved with democratic input. Subcontract them to members of the Davos class, and you hollow out democracy while kindling popular fury. See, this is the way it looks to folks on the outside. And I understand that for folks who are part of the quote-unquote elite, they think of this as, oh, no, it's social purpose. These are for good things. Right, but when we see, you know, you guys flying around in jet planes, attending conferences about how you shouldn't be flying around in jet planes, it kind of smacks of hypocrisy. And we get the sense, by looking at your massive multiple mansions all around the country in areas that are supposed to be underwater from climate change, for example, we get the sense that you might not really believe some of this stuff. It just comes across that way sometimes. Social purpose. That's why I had to kind of laugh. This guy, what's his name here? Is it Chamath Palihapitiya? Chamath Palihapitiya? Anyway, he's like a part owner, like a very small part, part owner of the NBA basketball team, the Golden State Warriors. And he was doing some podcast. I don't know who the guy is. I don't really care. Apparently, he's got a lot of money. And, well, obviously, he's a part owner, but a very small part of the Golden State Warriors. And somebody asked him on the podcast about the Uyghurs. And that, of course, has to do with the Chinese genocide of the Uyghurs and the enslavement of an entire group of people, religious minority, and enslaving them in order to make iPhones, right? Oh, I'm sorry, and also Nike products. So, well, among other things, right? I mean, isn't that the idea? Isn't that what they're doing? And so when you criticize them, and for the NBA, this is a very, very touchy subject, has been for a while, right? So this guy gets asked about the Uyghurs on this podcast, and He says, I don't care about the Uyghurs. It's below my line. He keeps saying, like, it's below my line. I don't care. No one cares about the Uyghurs. You guys just bring this up or whatever. And then within, I think, about 4 or 5 seconds, he's now having to put out the cleanup statements, like, and the Golden State Warriors are like, we just want everybody to know he doesn't really own a lot. He's not involved in the day-to-day operations. Like, everybody's all very upset because he said what we all can see to be true, which is that they don't care about the Uyghurs. They don't. I'm sorry. Is anybody under an illusion that the NBA does care about the Uyghurs? No, they don't. Obviously not. If they did care about the situation in China, they would not be, you know, like bowing down and kissing commie rump every time they get a chance to, right? LeBron James might be saying some things that are negative about China, but he doesn't. So it's very clear that their social purpose doesn't include the enslavement of all of these Chinese people because these Uyghurs by the Chinese government. By the communist regime, because they're making a lot of money. That's their social purpose. It is subsumed underneath the profit motive for them personally. So, saw this this reaction to the thing. This is Brent Scher. He's the executive editor at the Washington Free Beacon. He says he doesn't really do these Twitter threads and all, but he said the coverage over this, he says it's a great example of what I like to call systemic media bias, which is a great term. Systemic media bias. It's not a single, not a single mainstream media story. And it's been covered all over the place. Okay, but not a single mainstream media story mentions the fact that this guy Chamath Palihapitiya, anyway, not a single one of these stories mentioned that Chamath gave $250,000 to Joe Biden's campaign. Do you think that's important? Do you think that's newsworthy? If you're covering the story of like a loaded millionaire, billionaire guy who's like a part owner of the Golden State Warriors, a very small part of the ownership group, do you think it might matter if he gave $250,000 to Joe Biden's campaign? The CNBC story mentions that the comment came during a discussion of the Biden administration, but it doesn't even bother to mention that he's a big Biden donor. Where do you think that this information might be mentioned if the heartless billionaire gave $250,000 to Donald Trump? Do you think it might be a prominent feature of the story? He says, I'm not sure it's deliberate protection of Biden. It's a mix between fact that most reporters are bad and they don't know how to find info, and that every tech billionaire is a massive Democrat donor. So pointing it out is like saying, you know, water is wet. But it's this is a major Biden donor, and he's saying that nobody cares about genocide. Right? He's a very rich donor. Yeah, he says somehow it seems like the only person to ask Biden about it is this guy, C. Anderson, Colin Anderson, staff writer at the Free Beacon. And the White House actually commented on it because, you know, it's something that, you know, he should be asked about. The Biden administration actually said that it rejects this statement and will continue to hold the PRC accountable, the People's Republic of China, and then pointed to Biden's support for the bipartisan Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act and other measures to ensure all global supply chains are free from the use of forced labor. So the administration has been asked to comment on it by the Washington Free Beacon. But it doesn't get any mention. This stuff doesn't get mentioned. This is media systemic bias. And I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind. This systemic bias as it relates to Jim Goodman's comments from WRAL, what gets covered and what doesn't, how it gets covered. For example, Will Duran at the News and Observer just did a big piece about the Democrats' voting rights bill. Hey, Will, it's not a voting rights bill. It's not what the bill is. That's what the Democrats are calling it. Maybe, I don't know, reassess the assumptions of who's telling you the truth on stuff. Every now and again. Just every now and again.